Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales from March 2013 through Diamond to retailers in North America. It's covering trades, hardcovers,
graphic novels,
original graphic novels, unoriginal graphic novels.
80-page giants.
In one case, a book and a mask.
Oh, yes, a book and a mask.
It's got the usual stuff. Looking at the trades this time around, Marvel had a very commanding lead in terms of the breakdown of the total unit sales for the top 300 trades, 40.44%. DC, quite a ways behind, with 20.55% of the units. Image with 14.47%. Now, that's all by units, and Marvel had like 125 items on the list, so well over a third of it.
I don't think it's been this lopsided in quite a while.
No, I don't think so.
Right, yeah. Well, it's been pretty much DC and Marvel and then, you know, Image. But, looking at the total dollar amount, it's just, that's a, you know.
Nearly
amazing.
$5 million. It's,
right, nearly
4.8.
$5 million, right.
Well, the units, 144,112 units for Marvel. Again, 125 items. That's just staggering. By dollars? 53.86% of the dollars for the top 300 trades went to Marvel, 18.05% to DC, and 10.57% to Image.
I love comparing months when we do the minutes this lopsided. Did Marvel dominate that much so on the comic side?
Comic side, it was pretty interesting because what happened there is they had 46.35% of the units for the top 300 comics. DC had 31.91%. But if you add DC's 31.91%, Image's 7.04%, IDW's 4.81%, and Dark Horse's 3.64%. So the other four premier publishers combined. Mm-hmm. They're at 47.39%, which is only 1% higher than Marvel.
Man. Yeah, Marvel really kicked butt this month.
So Marvel and Boom, with its 1.06%, did better than DC, Image, IDW, and Dark Horse on the comic side. But it's interesting because on the comics, there were 83 Marvel comics, 78 DC comics. So, you know, about the average numbers. Mm-hmm. DC had 49 items on the trade list. Image had 40. Again, Marvel 125.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And now what's also entertaining is Image had total units of 51,578 units, of which 34,217 were Kirkman. That's about little under two-thirds, so 66.34% of Image for Kirkman. Out of Kirkman's part, only 868 of those were new material, and that was the current Guardian of the Globe of Volume 2 trade paperback. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. I want to talk about the data cleaning process I'm doing, and that's a good example of it. But 29,233 units for the Walking Dead trades in aggregate. All 17 of them placed really in the top 157, which, of course, the top 157 is a standard metric everyone knows. It's not. It's just that's where the last one landed. But all 17 were in there. So Image did well. I mean, it did twice as well as Dark Horse, almost exactly, slightly higher than twice as much. But Walking Dead's trade paperbacks alone did better than Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a juggernaut. And again, 33,000 units plus of reorder activity for Kirkman. This is where evergreen-type properties pay off in spades.
Right.
Sure, he's got the TV show to help support it, the various board games and whatnot, but the strength of the material is the comic property itself, particularly in trade paperback form. People read it, they get sucked into the narrative, they keep going. I mean, I may not think the current Walking Dead stuff is the high point of the series. I personally would say that's around the Governor saga or whatever.
Right.
But this thing is a juggernaut, and people are still really liking it. It's still selling. It's not showing, you know, any kind of, you know, oh, it's jumped the shark or anything like that. It may not be at its high point, but it's not bad at all. And again, it is doing, that one property is doing better than everything except Marvel and DC in total.
Mm-hmm.
It's doing better, obviously, than the rest of Image. It's doing better than all of Dark Horse, or IDW, or Viz, or Boom, or, you know. It's crazy. Actually, if I work up from the bottom of the list, it's doing better than the combination of the top 300 trade sales from Valiant, Archie, Top Shelf, Hatchet, Legendary, Zenoscope, Avatar, Humanoids, Touchstone, Oni, Dynamite Diamond, First Second, Random House, Slave Labor, Arcana, Fantagraphics, and Heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, very, very lopsided month this time around. Typically, I think it's gotten to where it's more of almost a four-way split or whatever. Marvel, DC, Image, and everybody else or what have you. But again, 40% of the units to Marvel, over half the dollars.
Did you say The Walking Dead does more than the rest of Image?
Image did a total of 51,578.
Okay.
Of that, 29,233 of it were The Walking Dead trade paperbacks.
Okay.
There were the compendiums and I think a hardback or two also. And let me pull up a calculator to do the math. That is 68% percent of Image.
Wow, that's crazy.
One property.
And we don't see it stopping. We've been talking about it for years now.
No. You know? And
it might wane a little bit with the summertime, but when the TV show kicks back in October, you know, Days Gone By will be in the top 10, top 5.
What's impressive is it's not is slowing down either in terms of how the new trades are doing or in how the old trades in aggregate keep selling.
Right.
You know, it's not like everybody's finally gotten on board and they just got to catch up or something. Now, at some point, the series will end, at which point the question is, does it then slowly die off in interest as being a done thing? You know, much like we've seen on various other properties, you know, that are hot while they're active and then cool off because there's nothing kind of fanning the flames, if you will.
I wonder how long the TV show is going to last.
I have no idea.
You know?
I'm actually not watching it because I'm basically not going to watch something that looks that gross.
Yeah, I mean, I watch it just, you know, it's on kind of thing. But, I mean, it was okay. I mean, it's been slow in some spots. It's been good. But, you know, and I'm guessing that they're going to be on their way to Washington, you know, if they progress that way, which will make for an interesting show to see how they do it on TV anyway. So,
well, I hope it does well for them and stuff and keeps going. I think it's good visibility for comics and stuff. I just, I don't watch horror films and I know it's not a horror film.
Yeah.
But it's a little, has the potential of being darker, grosser, and more violent and stuff than I can stomach. And I've got a low tolerance for that. I know that.
Well, and I think that's what they said, that the new season will be more about the walkers and, you know, There'll be more walkers out there, I guess, because this, you know, this past season was so much on Woodbury and that whole, you know, the zombies were just kind of like secondary to everything.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't really even much of a threat, you know, and so, you know, but they said they're going to be more threatening now, so which might be interesting.
Just to set the barometer on what sort of level I can handle. This last year at Comic-Con, my sister goes with me and she said, "Hey, let's go check out the Spartacus panel." And they had the trailer of what they're going to do for the next season. And the amount of blood and guts that spewed in that trailer was far beyond what I was. It's like, I'm never watching this. It's like, yeah, I know. It's like, and you didn't tell me? It's like, I knew that anyways, actually.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't watch it either. No.
I rewatched 300 and was reminded just how many, you know, beheadings and lopping offs things. And it's like, God, not for me.
Yeah, that's one big long fight.
Yeah.
So
shall we dive into the top 300 list?
Let's do it, Batman.
Batman's City of Owls hardcover takes the top spot. That's the second volume of the hardcovers. That did 9,054. That's down actually a lot, I think, from the total known sales of the first volume, which again has had 6 months or whatever, so not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But the first volume, The Court of Owls, the trade paperback came out, 7,222 estimated units. Obviously, Batman, very popular. Who'd have thunk it? Top title at DC since the reboot and stuff, for the most part, are up near there in the top two or three or whatever. So, not a big surprise here. I'm glad they're having success. What I found interesting was the top Marvel trade paperback here was Hawkeye.
It's very good.
It's great.
Yes.
And it did just shy of 7,000 with 6,988 units. Now, what's interesting with this is this, how many issues did this have in it?
Let me check.
Six?
Let me check. I think six, yeah.
Thereabouts. We'll say six, maybe I'm off by.
I'll double check. Keep talking, I'll check.
But each one of those was essentially done in one story. It's not like you get the trade and get one story. You're getting at least five or six. One was a two-parter. If it had seven, those had two, you know, half stories or whatever, if you will. So it averages to one.
It collected one through five, and Young Avengers presents number six.
So six issues, just not all of Hawkeye.
There you go.
But the Young Avengers one was of the other Hawkeye, so that's not a bad choice. I'm glad to see that's really working in the trade format. On the monthly side, it's doing well, but things that do, you know, okay over there often just do not do wonders on the trade side. So I think this is a really good sign for that title.
This will get some reorder activity next month, I bet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's been a little bit of a sleeper hit. A lot of people have been talking it up, and I think it takes a while for some people to get on board, and some people are, it's like, oh, I'll check it out and trade.
I didn't get on board till like issue four, and I've been reading it digitally ever since.
I'm getting virtually everything over at Marvel, so yeah, I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. It's good.
I didn't get that. Now, looking at this, I didn't get the Marvel Young Avengers Presents book, so I got to go dig that up now.
That was some good stuff.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed that, and I'm also really enjoying the new Young Avengers series.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah.
So it's great art, great story, fun characters, so... Nothing to go wrong with there. Top item from Dark Horse, Avatar: The Last Airbender, Volume 4. This is part one of The Search. This is trade paperback, 6,145 units. It's down about a third from the total known sales of the previous volume, which was the third part of The Promise. Now, what they're doing with these is... pretty much three volumes of trade paperbacks and then doing a really nice hardcover.
Okay.
So I got the nice hardcover of The Promise, and of course I haven't gotten around to reading it just yet. But, you know, it's carrying on from where the series ended and presumably going to fill in the gap kind of between there and what's happening with The Legend of Korra TV show. Rounding out the top five, we've got the first volume of the trade paperback for The Walking Dead. I think you may have heard of this title. And it did another 6,059 units, putting its total reported sales, according to my spreadsheet here, 272,497 units. While we're here, I want to talk about something for a sec.
All right.
And we'll also jump down, go back to the Guardian of the Globe when we talk about this. One of the things I've been talking about for eons, since the Ice Age and we started recording these episodes, is that I need to rework the cleaning process for the data. Now, I'm in the process of doing that. I've got a new engine to do all the scrubbing and stuff. It's much faster. And I'm kind of going between the old and the new. I've got some help. A couple of listeners on the forum have been really helpful in starting to look through the data and help me identify some of the problems and stuff. But in the process of doing all this, I am rethinking, and I really want your opinion on this, Chris, and certainly if the listeners would chime in, I'd appreciate it too. I'm rethinking how I want to clean or how I need to clean this set of data with trade paperbacks and such. Because typically what I do is on the comic side, I try to figure out, well, which volume of Walking Dead is it? Now, in fairness, with Walking Dead, it's really easy. There's the one series of comics. Mm-hmm. But when you get to something like Guarding the Globe, and where was that in here? That was in here somewhere. That gets a lot harder, and it becomes a much more challenging question, particularly in light of the trades, because this is volume 2 of the trades. Now, volume 1 of the series of comics was 6 issues. It was a miniseries. Then it went to the ongoing, which was 6 issues, which is what's in this volume of the trade. So I've got it listed. There it is. It's on rank 142. I've got it currently listed as Guarding the Globe with a parenthetical 2012. I'm using the launch year of the title. And then Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, does that really make sense? Or should it just be Guarding the Globe Volume 2? Do you see what I'm getting at there?
I see it. You know, and we've kind of come across this before because you're at the mercy of how Diamond numbers these, right?
For the volumes, kinda... yes. Yeah. For the years, I'm putting those in there.
Right, okay.
And I have to do that, particularly with a title like Guarding the Globe or Captain America or something, where we've had multiple volumes. Because if I don't do that, and this has caused some problems on the comic book side of things, I would take the two number one issues of Guarding the Globe, and if I don't differentiate them from which volume or which title run they're in, they lump together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. Whereas, obviously, with Walking Dead, yes, it started in 2003, but you know, one of the things I love about Kirkman, he started at 1, went to 2, then 3, then 4, and kept going. No numbering stunts, none of these shenanigans. So it's just Walking Dead. I could do that on the comic side, but I like actually highlighting when it launched just to point out he's actually been doing it a decade. I don't need that. I'm thinking it's not appropriate on the trade side. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm such a layman when it comes to stuff that you crunch the numbers, so I'm not even sure how to even address this. And I don't mean to give you a blank answer, but...
No, give it some thought and get back to me on it and stuff. Yeah. Think about it in terms of not it's a technical problem or anything like that, but if you were a librarian... If you were putting these books on your bookshelf and,
exactly.
and then had a catalog of them, how would you catalog them?
Exactly. You know, that's an excellent point because at my library, and I think I've talked about this before, I've got a great library at Bloomfield Hills, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in the children's section, okay, they have a comic book section. You know, and that's where they keep, a couple of Iron Man trade paperbacks. They keep all the Tintin in there, which is very interesting to me. And then you go to, and they have the Star Wars comics too,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of stuff. Then you go to the young adult section, which is in the other side of the library. And that's where they have all the manga listed. That's where they have, like Fantastic Four Essentials. That's where they got the Superman books. They got the Ultimate Spider-Man stuff there. And then you go to the literary graphic fiction, okay? And
all
that right. is where you can find the Will Eisner a contract with God and
okay,
stuff like
okay.
that. Three different sections of the library drives me absolutely nuts. You know,
yeah,
especially when
more
it comes
complicated
to like,
than I would like. Yeah,
yeah, especially when it comes to like Tintin. I mean, Tintin I could see as children's, but there's a lot of adult themes in there.
Yeah.
Over the years, and especially if you want to go full blown adult and talk about Tintin in America, and they don't carry Tintin in the Congo, but you kind of see what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. Is also very historical and could be more or less in the young adult fiction. And then Contract with God, you know, and the Will Eisner stuff. And that's where they also have like some Doonesbury books and some Bloom County trades and stuff like that. They've got that over in the literary fiction as well.
Well,
so it's messed up. And you're kind of at the mercy of the librarian. I'd love to go in there and just make it one giant graphic fiction wall, you know?
Yeah. No, I can totally see that. One of the local stores here in town, Austin Books, groups all their comics by genre.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never find anything because of it.
All right.
But, I mean, part of my goal with the improved data cleaning process is not only is it tons faster, but it's set up such that I can now say, I would have the ability to say, this title is part of this imprint. So I could set up an imprint for the Before Watchmen versus the Ultimate Comics versus... Vertigo or whatever, and just identify which titles are where.
Do you don't you have a contact at Diamond?
Yes, but this is an area where, frankly, they haven't been incredibly helpful.
No.
I mean, they have the data they have.
Yeah.
And I've tried getting older data from them, and part of it is, I mean, they're like any company. They've got a ton of stuff to do. They're continuing to try to be a leaner, meaner machine and stuff, and I respect that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I've asked, hey, can you go get me the previews on disk, the previews on Windows, the master data file, the older, essentially the previews data in a database format with stuff split out to different columns. If I had that from 2003 forward, and I've got it for the last few years, but I don't have it for all, 2003 to 2008 would fill up most of my gap. Suddenly I would have something that would have a unique identifier for each series, mm-hmm. making splitting out some of these things a lot easier. With Batman and Robin right now, it's going to be Batman and Robin, then followed by Batman and Batgirl, Batman and Red Robin, Batman and Nightwing, Batman.
That's right.
And I'm doing all this on a text string.
Ugh.
It's a headache, you know? And then when I realize that some of the stuff I'm doing with the trades, you know, basically trying to mimic what I'm doing on the comic book side, it's just not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
So what I need to do is basically it's like, okay, skip over that step for the trade side, but then how do I need to make this work? You know, how do I get it to where it would take the first volume of some trade paperback that we know is probably going to have a second one, or maybe we don't know that, but it might, and actually just kind of dummy up that volume one. One of the things I was doing this evening is I was looking at the numbers here for the Superman Earth 1, Volume 1,
mm-hmm.
down at rank 252, and I looked at that number, which I think on your copy of the spreadsheet's around 9,000 and something, and I'm like, that's not right. There's no way that's right. They did like twice that just in the opening month. So I wound up pulling up that data just from the month-to-month list and stuff. And what I found was there were a lot of times where the description was just, it's the Earth 1, Superman Earth 1 hardcover versus the Superman Earth 1 hardcover Volume 1. It's like, well, crap, now I got to deal with that. So
that was my question. Go back to Diamond. Who makes that decision? Is that coming down from DC, or is that coming down from Diamond?
I think it's coming from DC, but I am not certain.
Okay.
But it's annoying regardless. And I get why they did it.
No, if it's annoying, that's how maybe you could talk to Diamond and figure out what the problem is.
Even if I do, the historical data is never going to change.
Right.
So it's kind of it'd be nice. And the other thing I'd like to do is find a way, obviously not for Superman Earth 1, but for something like Walking Dead, to be able to hook in the component issues to the trade. So I don't have to ask you, hey, Chris, what was in this this volume of Hawkeye? I would actually have, here's what's in the collected edition.
Well, you used to have that.
I was maintaining it by hand.
Well, I maintain mine by hand. That's the thing. I mean, I they don't always release that in the solicitations.
Yeah.
As much as I love IDW, and we both love IDW, their solicitations are horrible.
I'm going to say these days most solicitations are horrible.
Yeah. Same with Dynamite. Dynamite's terrible too. You know, I wish they would what's in that Queen Sonya omnibus? I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's again going back, it's very niche what we talk about, but then again, it is important to us and it is important to our listeners and readers. And that's why when I have to sometimes scowl the Amazon comment section for a book just to find out what's in it, because a lot of times a reader will do a review on it and he'll tell you what is in it, or what, you know, or even a speculation as to what's coming up.
Well, I think it's in the publisher's best interest to be very upfront about that.
Yeah,
because it prevents people from buying two things that may have different names but essentially the same contents. Or, gosh, I can't get up to speed on this title because I'm missing this issue. I don't know where or if it's collected.
Right. Right.
And it can be challenging at times to find some of the back trades you're looking for.
Well, that's, for example, I'm looking at, like, G.I. Joe Cobra October Guard trade paperback coming out in the next few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No idea what exactly that means. You know, is it 1 through 4? Is it 1 through 5? I don't know. Somebody out there knows. You know, that's the thing. But I just don't know. You know, I don't know.
If somebody is interested in putting together a comics reading list of these trades are in here, or here's everything you would need to read to get up to speed on G.I. Joe or whatever, send me an email. I would be happy to work with somebody and put together a web front end of a sorts for that. If I could have the data, I mean, that way I'd have the data to be doing the number crunching on too. It'd be a win-win for everybody. Because I think there's definitely times where it's like, you know, do I want to get this trade or do I want to just look for the back issues online because they're cheap? Or, wow, these back issues are too expensive. I need a trade. It benefits retailers, the publishers, the readers, pretty much everybody.
But no, that's, I mean, there's a time that I had to go hunt down. I wrote Joe over at Dynamite and other guys at other companies just to ask them, hey, what is going to be collected in these books? And sometimes I'll have to get back to you on that. They don't even know off the top of their heads.
Oh, I don't expect them to off the top of their heads. I mean,
But they're like, you know, hey, that's a good point. Maybe we should do that. I've gotten that, you know, before. And it's like, yeah, you know, just go through. It wouldn't take that much, you know?
Yeah. But, well, and put it up on the website, make it accessible, make it easy to find.
Yeah. Well, no, because I know that my collected editions list, which I maintain by hand almost on a daily basis, you know, gets read a lot. That's the you know, not that I make any money, but it is the cornerstone of my website for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
part of it
more
for
so
me
than my blog
is I spend enough of my time. I mean, I'm getting 40 or 50 comics a week. I like to read. You know, and I go through those. I'm usually current on my reading, so that eats up a little time. I've got a job that eats up some time. I'm doing the podcast, recording it, editing it, uploading it, maintaining the website and all that takes time. This year I upgraded the forum. I've revamped all the images for the podcast and stuff. So, I mean, when I say I'm busy, I like to think I'm also being productive. And this was one of those things that I did for a while, these issues of Walking Dead or in this or whatever. It just got to where the main time I would do it is as I'm trying to get the numbers crunched and the article up for CBR and getting ready for these episodes. And it just, I got to where I didn't have time at that point, you know? But it's something I would like to get back into the mix, preferably in an automated fashion if I can, or a manual one if I can't, because I think it would be fun to be able to be comparing how did these issues of Batman do compared to those on the comic side. You know, if we get to a series of trade paperbacks like the Walking Dead ones, how do those sales stack up to how the component issues sales stacked up over time? There's a lot of fun stuff I think we could be seeing in that respect, and who knows, maybe be able to predict how the trades would do based on the component issues. Or not. You know, it'd be fun to do. It's just a matter of getting the data in place in a way that is easy and not horribly time-consuming to maintain. Because I've got just a ton of stuff on my plate, which, you know, is all fine and good and fun to do, but, you know, there are other things I'd also like to be doing also.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, but I'm working on, like I said, the data cleaning. I'm rethinking how the trade side needs to work and look a little different, because it's a different problem. And, of course, part of the challenge is identifying, is an entry on one of these lists a comic, a trade, or something else? So that's always fun.
Yeah, especially the something else.
Yeah.
the Thanos new book comes to mind.
Well, what was really tripping me up? T-shirts.
Oh, God.
Because what would happen is some of these T-shirts are coming out with a Batman number so-and-so cover T-shirt.
Right.
And my thing would be splitting out the number, treating the rest as issue text as if it's a comic book. It's not. So I'm basically decreeing that a format can now be a T-shirt as well.
There's no identifier to say that this is a T-shirt and not a book?
There is. Well, not in the text files.
Oh, I see.
In the master data file, yes, there's a column for that.
Oh, okay.
At this point, I see a T/S with spaces around it. Ah, it must be a T-shirt. And of course, I'm sure I'll hit some problem with that at some point, too.
Great.
But it's all good. It's just taking a while to get to. But if I can get that cut over to where it's at least no worse than what I've got, that'd be good. But part of it is how I've been doing this is really kind of stupid. Is I'll compare the results of the two. Well, golly, that looks wrong on one side, so I'll fix that. And what I should have been doing is only fixing the new to match. Because every time I fix the old, I've got to rerun everything through the old, and that takes forever in a day. And I mean that fairly literally. Whereas the new one just takes, you know, 20 minutes top to bottom to run through the million plus records of the different sources or whatever. Even that I might be able to speed up. But it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a question of what does right look like? And if there are other ways I should be either categorizing or cleaning this stuff up, now's a great time for people to be mentioning that. So, one of the other things I wanted to talk to you about, Chris, is Rank 35. Tower Chronicles Volume 4, Geist Talk, graphic novel, 2,044 units.
Never heard of it.
If you were to pull up the Marvel previews for April...
Okay.
On page something or other, and pardon me if I flip this open because I didn't think to jot down what page it was. And of course, they don't have page numbers on every page. 73 of the Marvel previews. This was published by Legendary. Keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
The Tower Chronicles Geist Talk premiere hardcover is coming out, collecting volumes 1-4. This is a graphic novel here on the list for volume 4. It's a $7.99 thing. Don't know how many pages. Let's see. The hardcover here that has four of them is 288, so we'll say 70-ish pages, thereabouts. How do you think that's going to do in hardcover, particularly going through Marvel? Do you think that will fundamentally change how it sells, just by giving it a higher visibility?
That is interesting. I'm pulling it up now. It's coming out July 17th.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's collecting 1-4 for $34.99. That is interesting. I don't know what the relationship is between Marvel and Legendary.
It clearly still has the Legendary logo. I think they're just publishing it through Marvel. I think it will be an interesting kind of experiment to see if getting into the Marvel catalog helps. We know there are stores out there that will buy from DC, Marvel, and maybe some of the other premier publishers, but rarely from the back half of previews.
Yeah.
Given that the back half of previews really, in many cases, certainly on the comic side, obviously different beast on the trade side, is a drop in the bucket. I mean, if we look at the...
Can I speculate on something a little off the cuff?
That's why I'm asking.
Well, it seems to me that that Legendary is also a movie studio. And I wonder if Disney Marvel bought the rights to make the movie through Legendary.
Ooh, that's a good question.
And are now going to republish this. Now that there's a movie coming out in July, but maybe they're testing the waters somehow.
That's possible, too. Very interesting speculation there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know what Geist Talk is. I'm gonna look this up and figure out the story. Is it kind of like a Conan kind of thing? What do you know? What this? Can you read the solicit on this?
Supernatural bounty hunter who tracks and destroys the uncanny evils that haunt our world. His harrowing mission leads him across the globe and into the darkest recesses of mankind's most dangerous places to banish a wide variety of poltergeists, demons, and other unfathomable evils to free his troubled patrons from their tormentors' ethereal grasp. So it seems like a supernatural bounty hunter of sorts.
Huh.
Not a bad premise.
Sounds like a movie. No.
Yeah, well.
I don't know.
Or four.
Or four, yes. I don't know. Very interesting.
I'm curious about this because I think... It, again, is going to have a different level of visibility.
Ooh, it's by Matt Wagner. Very cool.
And I think, like you, a lot of people are going to notice it because it's in the Marvel thing that didn't get to that part or missed it in previews. I mean, Legendary, it's not like it's got this big, you know, page count or whatever in the previews catalog. You could just stumble right over it and not notice it easily.
Are these just a series of graphic novels?
I believe so.
Okay. Because I think Volume 1 came out last September.
And again, these are $7.99.
$7.99 graphic novels. Okay, cool.
And I'm figuring 64 to 80 pages thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound about right for a 288?
Probably. Yeah, it sounds about right.
Hardcover collection. And again, 2,000 for the trade stuff isn't bad. Again, whether it was really a trade or just a prestige format comic book is debatable, but if it had been on that side of the list, it wouldn't have shown. The previous volumes sold, let's see, the first volume, 4,875, with some reorder activity pushing it to 5,427. The second volume, 2968, third volume 2495, and then the third volume here 2044 units. So dropped some over time, but you know, really it was coming out, it looks like September, end of September, end of November, early December, end of March. So every 6-8 weeks, give or take.
Okay.
So yeah. Every other month, roughly. Because, yeah, if the third one had come out a week earlier, it would have been in the end of January. So, yeah, roughly bimonthly.
Okay. Yeah, I'm on the Legendary website, and I don't see anything in their news section.
It seems to me like a bimonthly series of prestige format books that they're just compiling to a hardcover.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, getting it out through Marvel.
Through Marvel.
And I'm curious if that gives it better visibility and if that helps.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure that will. Much better visibility. Yeah, that's interesting.
So, I thought I would ask about that.
I will. I wonder if Legendary is going to be at C2E2.
Good question. If so,
and
you
if
can
they
ask them
are,
in person.
I'm going to ask them. Absolutely.
Because inquiring minds want to know.
That's right. And even us.
That yes, and even us. Exactly.
Can I bring up something right below it?
Sure.
Rank 39.
Okay.
The Shade trade paperback.
This
for $19.99. This is the
12-issue miniseries they just did?
That Robinson did. Kind of follow-up to Starman in a way.
Uh-huh.
Didn't get a whole lot of traction. I think DC kind of... Well, let's see the numbers on this. 1,969, which is not very much for a... It was really hyped up, and there was no Starman, in this, no Jack Knight, which I really think it hurt it. If he even showed up in a panel or two, that would have helped out this series, I think.
I think even if the other Starman from the Alien one, if he'd shown up, that might have helped.
Right. But, you know, I read the first two issues, and I kind of got lost. It's very wordy. I'm not sure what Robinson was trying to do with the series. But in any case, and I understand why they put it in a trade paperback, because it just didn't sell very well. But it would have been really cool to have this in a hardcover to match the Starman omnibus books.
That would have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very much would have been cool.
And if this was portrayed maybe as a Starman kind of volume 7 or a companion piece to the Starman omnibus volumes, which I think it is, it just isn't portrayed that way. Wasn't marketed that way. And I really think that hurt this series.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was the only real maxi series they did, 12-issue limited series. It launched in October 2011 at above 30,000 units. By that second issue, a little over a month later, the second issue I think might have been a week or two late, in November, it had gotten to around 22,000. And then from there, it just kind of slid down.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time it was done, it was around the 14,000 mark, give or take. I'm looking at a chart, so I don't have exact numbers on this. It was one that, you know, just kind of had that second and third issue drop, and then just kind of, you know, slid down, started to level off or whatever by the end. But you figure a DC title, when it's below 20,000 on the monthly side, is kind of in that danger zone, and it got there with a third issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And DC, it's the kind of thing. They collect it. It does 2,000 units. So, on average, not every store got one.
Yeah.
Most might have. Any store that got more than one, and you know there are some that did, meant there were stores that got none.
I think this might be one of those titles that in 5 years from now, people are going to look back and say, oh, I read that when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And because it's going to be one of those titles that are going to be very obscure. People are going to forget about it, but the people that remember it are like, oh, that was a really cool series, and they're just going to lie that they read it.
Well, it's the kind of thing, if DC were to come out with a Starman series of some sort that, you know, isn't a retread of the old, but is harkening back, covers new ground in the New 52 universe, whatever.
He's bound to show up somehow, the New 52.
I think he's been he or somebody like him have been alluded to in the Justice League of America series.
Okay.
With Stargirl's...
Stargirl, that's right. She's there.
She's got the equipment from somebody else, and what happened to them?
Well, it's Jack's... it is Jack's staff, you know.
Jack's staff, but there's also the possibility it could be the Star-Spangled Kid. So,
oh, that's true. I didn't think about that.
You know, they've got some options. But if they were to do something that brings the Starman stuff back to the forefront, get James Robinson on it, get the excitement going again, they could really get the interest in the Shade, in this case.
Well, is anybody paperback. Reading Whistling Skull? What's that series like?
That's a different creative team. He's not doing that.
He's not doing that. Okay, I thought he was. Okay.
That was... who did Hawaiian Dick? It's the writer from that. Blanking on the name.
Epo Smith.
No. Bob and I reviewed the first issue of that, and it was a swing and a miss on so many levels. It was not what we had expected. The JSA does not really show up in there. The art style is...
B. Claymore.
B. Claymore. That's who I was thinking. That is who did Hawaiian Dick, right?
Yes.
Thank you. I was going to be a little ashamed of myself if I got that wrong. Not surprised, but ashamed. But with, the Whistling Skull, it's just... almost a little cartoony in the art style. It's not what Robinson had done back with the stuff a decade ago.
Mm.
And why bring something from a decade past? It made no sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I think DC's got a real problem now because their miniseries are not working. When we see them collected, particularly in this case, they're not working. So how can they get a vehicle for kind of introducing... you know, new properties out there in a viable manner? I mean, have we seen any of their miniseries get collected from the new 52 stuff and really just kind of do really well?
Yeah.
I mean, the Huntress stuff did fine, but they did fine on the individual comic side too.
Well, and you know what? I keep waiting to see that quality trade paperback of those characters come out, and nothing yet.
I think they're a little shy. Well, they've got the content, actually, because they've done the Ray, Phantom Lady, they did Human Bomb. Doll Man was part of the Phantom Lady one.
Phantom Lady, I'm sorry, you're right.
There was another one in there, though. There was a...
Well, they did the Madam X one shot.
I'm not counting them. Well, they did Madam X, the Eternity, Rosenthorn,
right.
And what
That's
was
right.
the other one, the fourth one? You know, I've got a spreadsheet that's got all this. I could just pull that up and answer my own question, because I can never remember all this.
Yeah.
All right. DC.
I read those. I enjoyed those. I thought that was pretty good.
So National Comics had Eternity, Looker, Rosenthorn, and Madam X.
Mm-hmm.
But they did Phantom Lady, Human Bomb, and the other miniseries
Did the Ray.
And what's interesting is the Ray was part of Young Justice, but Phantom Lady, National Comics, Human Bomb, and the Young Romance stuff were all franchise-less, if you will.
Right.
And they've started actually merging the franchises. The Dark, The Edge, and Young Justice are all kind of lumped together for Movement and Green Team, which are starting up soon. It's interesting. I've been tracking all the different titles and stuff, and really... a surprising number of the original New 52 titles are still around. I mean, I know people feel there's been a lot of churn, but they've got about 2/3 of them still around.
Mm-hmm.
And after almost 2 years, that's really not too bad. Not going to say it's amazing or anything, but I mean, you got to figure there was going to be some turnover. But none of those miniseries did gangbusters. Shade was, of course, the longest lasting and therefore one of the most recent, because really after... the first batch, they did Phantom Lady, the National Comics, Human Bomb, and that's it.
Right.
And Phantom Lady and National Comics kind of overlapped with the Shade. So really, the Human Bomb's the only miniseries they've done since then, which is frankly surprising, but given the sales numbers, makes a lot of sense. They weren't selling. So if you can't do a miniseries and have it sell worth beans, and when you collect it, it doesn't do incredibly well... And when you try to do something like DC Comics Presents, the series of miniseries disguised as a series, and that's ending because it's not doing too well, you're starting to run out of options. So what I suggested in my latest Comic Book Resources article, try the backdoor pilot.
Mm-hmm.
do an arc on some title, guest star some character, do not relegate the lead to a back feature, to a supporting cast member. Have them be, you know, a team up, a pair up, or whatever, or adversaries, whatever. But build some audience for that character, and then if there is demand, spin them out to a miniseries.
Well, that's why I'm liking Phantom Stranger right now, because they essentially, you know, they've got these great characters. They're kind of the obscure, and we kind of talked this before we started. It's not Justice League Dark. It's a little more, I don't know, noir-ish, I guess.
We've had guests starring in there, Trigon. Looks like the Creeper, although we haven't actually gotten the Creeper
Jack,
part of him.
Jack is right.
Yeah, Jack Ryder.
Yeah.
We've had the Question.
Yep.
We've had
the Spectre.
Spectre, certainly the Spectre, a major one.
Dr. 13,
you're right.
So
they're getting a lot of those fringe mystic type characters.
Yes.
We've had Sargon, Zatar, Tanarak or whatever, and one other, the evil mystics or whatever.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a good way for them to leverage their back library of wide cast of characters. But even that isn't the sort of thing where I would expect one of those to kind of spin out to their own thing.
No, I mean, if anything, Spectre would.
That would be it. That's, I could see that. You're right.
Yeah.
But,
The Earth 2 is doing very well.
Yeah. Earth 2 is actually very interesting. I mean, the first card cover here at rank 10, it's the 3,514 units. I'm enjoying the series on a monthly basis. I like how it's kind of compartmentalized, self-contained, but not completely off on its own, because World's Finest kind of sort of ties into it without crossing over with it.
Mm-hmm.
That one's fun to see. It's one of the more hermetically sealed titles at the DC Universe. It's not completely that way, but more so than almost any other.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to see kind of one window into a world.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting to see how things shape up over the next year and stuff for the new 52, because I think they're having some successes, they're having a few places they're struggling. And of course, you know, we look at just the windfall month that Marvel had this time around, and a lot of it is, part of it is just how many damn things they had on the list with 125 and stuff. But when you've got Hawkeye doing pretty well, you've got, you know, Avengers versus X-Men doing pretty well, a lot of reorder activity on various things. The Avengers Season 1 premiere hardcover, 2,577 units. That's pretty impressive. I'm curious how many more of the Season 1s they're going to do. I think they've got two or three more in the pipeline, maybe.
I can tell you. Oops.
These are ones I'd like to pull out and have a tag or an imprint or something of the Season 1 things.
They got Wolverine.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's it.
Have you been reading these?
I read a few. I read the Daredevil one, and I read Doctor Strange. Did he have one?
Yes.
Yes. Then I read that. Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Some of the earlier ones, like Fantastic Four, they had a recent issue at the end to kind
Fantastic. Yes, I read Fantastic Four, too. Yeah.
So kind of read this, and now here's the current stuff. They haven't seemed to be doing that lately,
Which
I think is understandable, but an interesting decision.
Well, like the Wolverine one coming up, which is going to be coming out June 5th, collects the Wolverine story, whatever that will be, and Wolverine and the X-Men number 25.
Mm-hmm. So, again, a current issue to kind of, hey, now you've read this, go continue with.
Right. And it's no surprise that, you know, with the Wolverine movie coming out and kind of thing, too. So.
Yeah. It was interesting because in addition to just a bazillion things with reorder activity from Marvel, some of which looked like they were offering up at a pretty good discount to retailers, which makes sense. You know, we had Civil War at rank 166. It only moved 774 units, but its known total is around 97,472. So that's pretty impressive.
Still a good story.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoyed that story.
Another one that was a lot of fun was Wolverine Old Man Logan. It did 741 units. Its known total, according to the spreadsheet, 22,840. And yes, I am hemming and hawing a little bit more on the numbers this time than usual because I may have messed some stuff up with the data cleaning. Again, I know I did that with the Superman Earth 1 Volume 1. And one that I expect to see pop up on the list higher in coming months is down at rank 232, X-Men Days of Future Past trade paperback.
Yep.
Because the 556 units here, with its total now going up to about 8,150 known sales, this is more or less the thematic basis for the next X-Men movie. I mean, I'm correct on that, yes?
Yes, you are, yeah.
Because they're mixing the first class cast with the old other cast. This is the kind of trade that I would expect maybe a new printing of, and to just start seeing some seriously renewed interest in this.
What do you know what they collected in this? Because Days of Future Past is only X-Men 141 and 142.
They collected Uncanny X-Men 138 to 143,
as
well as
X-Men
Annual number 4.
So it's basically the masterwork in a way.
Yeah.
They collected everything leading up to it. Okay. Because my speculation is when the movie comes out, they're going to have an omnibus style book collecting Days of Future Past, maybe Days of Future Present. Remember that miniseries?
Oh, yeah.
They did. And some other stuff they'll throw in. They'll probably create a what if book or something like that too, you know.
But
throwing Old Man Logan, you know.
I would hope they would just do the Days of Future Past. Keep it at that.
No, I know. Yeah, but you know what? They throw everything in there. So.
But it's interesting because I mean I've got the solicit for this one, and it's got the first appearance of Alpha Flight, the return of Wendigo, history of the X-Men from Cyclops himself.
These are great comics, John.
Yeah.
I mean, this is great stuff. I mean, for people out there who've never read it, go get it. You know, it's easy to find, too. That's Days of Future Past have always been very available.
Now, what's interesting here, and I find it funny, because if we're recording this, obviously, in 2013, relive the legendary first journey into the dystopian future of 2013.
There you go.
Where Sentinels stalk the Earth and X-Men are humanity's only hope until they die. I guess I hadn't realized what year that story took place in. That's funny. But given when it was first done, that was probably quite a ways in the future then. So, again, this is the kind of thing I would expect to kind of pop up in sales as we get closer to the movie and stuff. And again, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I'm on the Wikipedia page. Yeah, there's Days of Future Past, there's Days of Future Present, there is a Days of Future Past in Excalibur. There's Wolverine, Days of Future Past, there's Days of Future Tense. I mean, there's a lot that Marvel could just throw together. Another view reality was Hulk Broken Worlds. So there you go. I mean, they could throw in all this for just to do it, you know? I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, well, we'll see what they do.
Yeah.
So, looking at the price breakdown, we've got a lot of things at the $19.99. That was about 18.67% of the list. About 50 items at the $24.99 price point. About 37 at the $14.99. One as low as $3.99. What was that one this time around? I didn't... Marvel Universe Iron Man comic reader trade paperback that at $3.99 calling it a trade paperback I think is generous. What do we have at the top of the list? We had a couple of big ticket items this time around.
All the omnibuses got re-released. So
yeah,
and plus we have the which I'm staring at on my shelf, which is awesome. Is the Death and Return of Superman book. That is nice. I missed the omnibus the first time, what was it, 5 years ago when it came out, and I am glad I missed it because I picked up this omnibus and it is awesome.
Cool.
This is a really cool book, and surprisingly it is not that hard to read. It is thick and big, but yeah, it's readable for one of these giant books. Which I guess if you own a lot of them like I do, and you do read them, they become easier to read.
Because like you build up the muscle tone. You've got the sturdy table.
Yes, you know, you kind of lean on the couch one side with it open with the lamp over you.
Why do I have this picture of, you know, how that Tom Cruise scene in Mission Impossible where he's like descended down from above?
Yeah.
He's flipping the page, going back down reading. Funny. So anything else you want to talk about this time around on the numbers?
I think we're good. Anything on your side?
No, it was pretty much most of what I wanted to talk about. I will admit this time around I was going through, and for some of these I was taking the larger publishers, splitting them by format, and I was noticing DC has a couple of not only trade paperbacks, but a few soft covers. What's the difference? I mean, just call them one thing, please.
Call it what it is, right? I'm
just, you know, it drives me nuts. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I got. You know, I look at these numbers, I look at them on the comics side. I'm getting to the point where I am seriously wondering, because I know, I think Bob and I mentioned this on a recent podcast, of how many people are just getting a handful of titles.
Mm-hmm.
I think we did that on the last previews call. I might be wrong on that, though. And, you know, if you're getting, like, you know, 6 or 10 a month, is it worth doing some of the stuff or not? I'm wondering how many people are not... I mean, I got a number of really great responses from people at that end of the spectrum. Yeah, I'm just dabbling, but I want to keep tabs. I like listening to the stuff, but frankly, it's not exciting enough or doesn't have the return on the investment. Or one person was overseas, and the shipping just made it impractical.
Yeah,
or the
I
exchange
could see that.
Rate. So, I mean, I totally get that. And really opened my eyes to a couple of things I just hadn't thought about. What I'm wondering is how many people are kind of more on the other end of the spectrum, kind of more where I'm at. I'm currently pretty much all in. I'm getting all the new 52 as they rotate them out and getting different titles, of course, but I'm getting it all. DCBS has been doing bundles for the Marvel Now stuff. So really the one title I might have skipped was Morbius I'm getting. So I'm pretty much all in on the Marvel side.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly all in on some of the smaller universes, the Ultimate Comics line, certainly the Valiant stuff, I'm loving that. Getting some stuff from, you know, Dynamite and IDW and stuff. I'm curious how many people are kind of, not necessarily literally all in, but are kind of the heavy hitters at their shop in terms of how much they spend, how much they read. Are we at a point where we still have a number of people that are getting just a... I mean, I'm getting 40 or 50, closer to 50 comics a week these days. And, you know, there are some that are not as good as others, but I'm loving them all.
Yeah.
You know, how many people are more at that end of the spectrum versus those that are just being more selective or have been turned off by the DC reboot or not that enthralled by the Marvel Now stuff? Or, frankly, the solicits aren't selling them, you know?
What is the average?
In terms of how many titles people get?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about that. Because, you know, are we at the point where we've got people who are getting, not a low amount, but a modest, not an exorbitant amount. Let me phrase it that way. Because I get a crazy number of comics, and I know this.
Mm-hmm.
But enough that... You know, one of those omnibuses would kind of break their budget for the week or the month.
Sure.
Or is just
unthinkable.
Yeah, I mean, those are expensive.
Yeah, even when I get the Death of Superman for 50% off, it's still expensive.
Exactly. That's part of why I tend not to get them.
Right.
I'd rather get the plethora of comics and stuff. But do we have more readers that are getting a ton of stuff? Are people being more selective? Are they getting into certain publishers and then just kind of blindly closing their eyes on the other ones intentionally to not get, sucked into that or something?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I'm very close to that. I would love to know, and I'm sure Comixology has purchases by user, you know.
I would kill for that data.
Oh, my God. That'd be awesome to know.
I would. I don't need to know who the purchaser is, but to be able to group by purchaser.
Right.
And by time. You know, because I think that's where digital sales differ wildly from print sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a lot of people who said, hey, I've cut back on the print side, but I'm getting a lot digitally.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're listening to the preview stuff, not so much to get the issues, but when it comes out in trade. You know, I know how I collect and read comics, and I know there are tons of other patterns, and I'd like to understand and know more about them, just because it influences my thoughts when I go through and do the number crunching.
Mm-hmm.
But man, getting the digital sales and being able to see, wow, there's this big spike every time they do a 99-cent sale on Hellblazer or the Avengers or, you know, whatever.
Well, I would like to know how many of those 700 Marvel titles were actually downloaded.
Yeah, I'd love, obviously enough to crash their server initially. Thousands.
Well, no, they just put it back up a week ago. So, but thousands, you know, they were tens of thousands probably. But
more importantly, how many of those users who got one of the free ones then read subsequent issues?
Or went out and purchased one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, because to me, that's where a lot of the power in these numbers are, is understanding buying patterns. Because once that's understood, and it is not at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see aggregates and I see some trends there, but I'm not going to go into a store and say, well, your customers are going to buy this way because. I would love to be able to do that, because I think if I or somebody could do that, we could fundamentally change the number of commas in these numbers. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's great stuff out there.
I do like that new model that Marvel has put out there, though, for like $70 a year. You can download, 5,000 comics or whatever it is, or many, many, maybe 100,000 comics. I'm not even sure.
You can download them at only like 6 at a time. So if you think about it.
But that's not bad of an idea. That, you know.
Well, if you're going to go on a flight or something.
Sure. Yeah. If you're going to go on a flight, right.
I read A Trade, that's it.
Right.
You know, I'm going on a cruise later this year with the family and stuff. Be fun to have a tablet loaded up with all kinds of stuff.
Right, with like 50 different, right. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I think it's a great deal, but...
It's a good deal, right.
I want to know when these publishers are going to realize that they could work with Comixology, set up a comp list, essentially, for reviewers and stuff, and distribute some stuff that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know? 50-50 if I'd take advantage of it or not. I mean, I'd like to have that, certainly.
Right.
I for me, it wouldn't impact what I buy. I know for other people, it almost certainly would.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you got coming up on your show these days?
Well, I am going to be talking about... I was going to record this past week, but I just didn't get around to it. So my next podcast will be on Fantastic Four Masterworks Volume 5. Which I may have talked about with you already. I said I was going to do it coming up, and I haven't done it yet, but I'm going to be doing it, and just talk about the impact of all the stories in that one single collected edition.
Cool.
The Inhumans, the wedding of Sue and Reed, the Frightful Four, and Ben getting all pissed off again at Reed, and then the arrival of Galactus and the Silver Surfer, and also what happened around that time, because it was... 1965, and it's an interesting time. Marvel getting their feet under them, so mm-hmm. to speak, with character development, and especially at the wedding of Sue and Reed, everybody was in that book at the time. Every hero made an appearance except for one. Do you know who that one character is?
No, I don't.
Namor did not show up in that issue.
That's actually surprising.
Very surprising.
He had to have been mentioned.
He was mentioned. He was off trying to... His series had just started with Tales to Astonish with the Hulk. So he was off fighting for his crown. So while he was lost in New York and, you know, going back and forth to the sea, we now understand why he was going back and forth to the sea. And, you know, he made that one appearance in Daredevil where he mm-hmm. tried to get Matt Murdock his lawyer, and that didn't turn out so well. but yeah, he went to go reclaim his crown, and you get into the whole racial overtones. Of course, back then, the 50s, it was not only that he was white and the Atlanteans were blue, but there are a lot of things up going above ground.
Yeah.
As you and I know, that was kind of a tone to that, which was great for Stan and Jack and everybody at Marvel at the time. They really exploited that, whether it be through that whole saga or the X-Men or whatever. But 1965, very interesting year. And that was also the year that Johnny ended his solo run in Strange Tales and he went off to college. So, you know, lots of crazy stuff was going on in 65 with all these characters. And
yeah, definitely.
It's almost like the second chapter of Marvel. The first chapter was 1962, 1963, with the Hulk, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man, and everybody. But now the corner is being turned. And now we get into a lot bigger stories.
They're kind of hit their stride at that point.
It's going, yeah, and it's going to continue for the next couple of years going up to the 1970s. So the latter half of the 1960s is much better than the first half of the 1960s, I should
say. Interesting.
Yeah, really cool stories. So cool. I was never a big fan of Marvel Silver Age especially, but over the past couple of years, I have really, really gotten into it, and it is a lot of fun, and it's... It parallels human history, you know, real human history, mm-hmm. so much that more people should sit down and read it, you know.
Yeah, no, I totally
agree. There's my podcast. I'm just going to swipe it from you.
Here, I'll edit it, level it, and give it to you.
There you go.
That's funny.
Now I know what I'm going to talk about tomorrow. So what's coming up on your show of shows?
Let's see. We're getting close to Weekly Comics Spotlight 300. Only a couple of more weeks till that. I think we'll talk one more time before that happens. Let's see, next Weekly Comics Spotlight, either before or after this, we're going to talk about Ferris number 14, Thanos Rising number 1, Harbinger Wars number 1.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
I like all those.
The following week, we're going to talk about Batman Little Gotham number 1, which I'm curious about. I haven't pre-ordered anything after that, so I don't know. Fantastic Four number 6, and then Invincible Universe number 1.
Okay, cool.
So, and then, of course, just the usual stuff going on, the preview spotlight and stuff. And again, part of what's keeping me busy is, like I said, I'm trying to get to where I can cut over to the new data cleaning process just because it's so much faster. And I've got one or two people on the forum that are just being a huge help on that, which I really appreciate. Because it's been hard to kind of squeeze that in fits and spurts between doing the reading, doing the podcast, stuff like that. Definitely keeping busy and stuff.
Cool.
But hopefully people are enjoying what we're doing and are listening and, you know, getting some stuff out of it.
I got two things I want to follow up with real quick.
Okay.
We talked about the season ones.
Yep.
Iron Man season one came out last week.
Mm-hmm.
No surprise, because there is another Iron Man movie coming up.
Yeah.
The second thing, and maybe you can riddle me this, Batman, the Day of Judgment trade paperback came out.
Yes.
Okay. And it's on the list. It is at rank 54.
Okay.
It did a respectable 1,674 units. But my question to you, and I wrote about this in my weekly feature that I do, which I kind of recommend books. Well, this time around, 2 weeks ago, I did not recommend this book, John.
Okay.
And that is because this was a pretty major event. Okay, and was written by a guy named Jeff Johns, who is pretty prominent these days.
I think I've heard of him, yes.
Okay, and with not only Marvel and DC, but a lot of omnibuses are being collected in these multi-page, multi-crossover stories. We talked about briefly the death and return of Superman,
uh-huh.
right? And the other omnibuses that are out and everything. To me, this would be a no-brainer to package... You know, Day of Judgment, Omnibus, whatever you want to call it, Absolute, I don't care. Jeff Johns' name is right there on it. It leads into, leads into one Hal Jordan that Jeff Johns knows a little bit about, becoming the Spectre.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, any explanation why this wouldn't have been collected in an oversized with all 25 issues instead of the... What do we got here? Day of Judgment 1 through 5 and the Secret Files for $14.99?
It was a side thing for another event, wasn't it?
Well, it was Day of Judgment.
Right, but that was not like an event on the scale of, you know, Final Crisis or some of these
others. No, it wasn't. No, but neither was Atlantis Attacks over at Marvel. You know what I'm talking about?
The difference is Atlantis Attacks really split into a ton of stuff. Did this really have 25
tie-ins?
This
crossed over to 25 tie-ins, yeah. It crossed over into Our Man, and it crossed over into Batman, a bunch of stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess you're right.
It crossed
right,
over
right.
into a ton of stuff. And it led into Hal being the Spectre, which then lasted for 25 issues. I just think it would have been a great opportunity to be a big event hardcover book for him. That's all.
I would not have done that myself.
Okay.
I thought it was... It was not bad when it came out, but it was not something that made me think, wow, they should really build on this and turn it into a big to-do. But, I mean, you've got some very valid points there, particularly, you know, the Jeff Johns connection, how it's with Hal Jordan and stuff. And I think, regardless of whether they included all the stuff or just the core miniseries itself, they could have and should have promoted it better. You know, I think a lot of these things almost die on the vine because they just toss it out there. Eh, maybe somebody will get it. Yeah, we'll write a sentence or two, toss it in previews, put a cover image on it. That's it.
Yeah.
They're not selling stuff.
Right. I don't know. I just think it was a missed opportunity. Maybe DC will revisit it. I mean, it had a pretty good team of the Sentinels of Magic who are now, you know, Phantom Stranger, Madame Xanadu. They're all over the New 52 these days.
That's a good
point. Led into, what was the Detective Chimp
team? I'm blanking on the name.
You know
I
know exactly.
Yeah, Bill Willingham did it. Shadow Pack.
It led into Shadow Pack, right? Which was a great series too. Which that should be collected if it's not already. I don't think
there's a ton of things they should be collecting.
I know. So,
they'll get to it. They just can't get it all at once. Sooner or later, everything they've ever done, you know, they'll have some trade listed as, and these are the last five.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, did you see that DC released their titles up and through February 2014?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, there's a ton of stuff coming out. I have it listed on my collected editions release schedule. Feel free to link to it. It's all updated. In fact, your Little Gotham trade paperback is expected to come out in February 2014, which will collect, just so you know, 1 through 3, and material from Detective Comics Annual number 11 and Batman Annual number 27.
So, is that just a 3-issue miniseries?
I don't know. Good question. Maybe it's just
It's a digital series first, so they're just printing it and stuff. I'm actually pleased with how much DC is doing digital and then collecting to print.
Yeah, me too.
Because I'm reading it in print for the most part, just because I like to have the comic. I hate trees. I'm kidding. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or SKUs and items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.